Welcome to a brand new episode of the internet's most hated mafia-themed geek podcast, the Long Coat Mafia Podcast. It is I, the Reverend Godfather, the show's main host and frontman. This week, the Death Star has aligned with the other planets to allow us to drop this special Star Wars-themed episode. Because why? It's May the 4th, and May the 4th be with you all. That's right. Star Wars special this week, and no, Disney, you do not own anything posted in this episode whatsoever. That's right, you don't own any of this, because we're for the fans, by the fans, and for everyone, not for your corporate greed. But that's beside the point right now. For all of you who enjoy Star Wars in any way, shape, or form, whether it's the Mandalorian, or it's Star Wars Rebels, or it's the Clone Wars, or what have you, this episode is for you. We're going to start off this episode in a way with a creepypasta. And for those of you who haven't been with the show for a very long time, very occasionally and rarely, when we really didn't have anything to post up, we'd read a creepypasta rather poorly. But we always gave credit to where credit is due, and it got decent listenership. So we found a kind of short, PG-ish, creepypasta theme, kind of a Star Wars-themed creepypasta for all of you out there listening. It was written, I gather, by someone posting as Darth Grizzly. That's what it says here in his in the post. The username was Darth Grizzly, so we're going to give this person, whomever he or she is, credit for writing this short little 3-4 minute creepypasta, and we kind of transformed it a little bit, giving it kind of a sound effect where needed, and granted, we're reading it poorly, so if Darth Grizzly, whomever you are, thank you for writing this. We just read your work rather poorly. We added a few sound effects to help us along with this, to add a little bit of a more of a story time feel to it, or a radio-esque feel to it. So, again, if you want to contact the show in regards to how bad or how good we did, you're more than willing to do so. Our email is longcoatmafia@gmail.com, and our Facebook page is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. Just contact us. We'll be happy to communicate with you. But here it is. We did a few changes for it. Again, it's PG-13, at most PG-13, but mostly it's PG, but still, it's a creepypasta nonetheless, and Star Wars themed, perfect for this week. Here is that creepypasta. Hello, I'm Darth Grizzly. I'm here to tell you a story that was kept classified by the Rebellion and the Empire for years since. But first, let's go back to 0BBY to set in the story. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the tale of Red Zero. Yavin 4, 0BBY. The Battle of Yavin has begun. A squadron of X-Wings and Y-Wings take on the Death Star in order to destroy it before the Rebel base is blown up. It was close, but Red 5, Luke Skywalker, manages to destroy the Death Star with the help from the Falcon. A victory with many casualties, but one death was forgotten as soon as it happened. His name was Alex Miles, Red Zero. Alex was a child of an Imperial family, but escaped from the Imperial Academy after causing a riot at the Academy. He was found by the Rebel pilots in a stolen freighter. They saw potential in Miles, so they trained him to be an ace pilot. Unfortunately, he was rough, arrogant, and generally a cocky person. He participated in the Battle of Scarif and eventually Yavin. Sadly, due to his arrogance, he was shot out of the sky by TIE fighters. He never had a funeral. Imperial Space 2 ABY. Somewhere in the Imperial Space, AISD, Imperial Star Destroyer, a routine patrol around the system. Everything was clear in the scanners. That is, until the captain spotted a X-Wing about 3,000 meters from the bridge. The captain described the X-Wing as burned, broken, and wrecked. Just as the captain was about to order TIE fighters to take care of it, a transmission came. It was from the X-Wing. They played the transmission out loud and it said, "Remember me." Then the X-Wing charged to the bridge of the ship, full speed. The captain ordered to raise the shields on the bridge immediately, but it was too late. The X-Wing rammed the bridge in a dramatic way, destroying the Imperial Star Destroyer and everyone in it. However, the X-Wing came out unscathed. A nearby Imperial shuttle, frightened, was preparing for a jump to hyperspace, but mysteriously, the hyperdrive was malfunctioning. Panicking, the shuttle sends a distress signal for help. An Imperial Star Destroyer picks up the transmission from the shuttle, and it said, "Mayday! Mayday! This is Shuttle 5543! We're under attack from a rogue X-Wing! Location is..." "Remember me." Both the shuttle and the Imperial Star Destroyer were destroyed by the X-Wing in minutes. Legend has it, the X-Wing is still spotted by Rebel and Imperial pilots. Those who see it have the same transmission before being killed off. "Remember me." Rebels have identified the X-Wing as none other than Red Zero Alex Miles. Since then, Red Zero has terrorized Rebel and Imperial forces for years, up to the days of the First Order. He is still out there, waiting for his next target. Welcome back, everybody. Again, that was the Star Wars themed creepypasta called Red Zero. Again, it was written by Darth Grizzly. Again, Darth Grizzly, if you're listening to this, please contact the show at longcoatmafia@gmail.com or our Twitter handle at longcoatmafia or on Facebook under the pinned post. Our Facebook page is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. Links are in the show's main page, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And feel free to contact us about, you know, how well we did, how poorly we did. We know we read it kind of poorly, so feel free to critique us on that little short story reading. We just wanted to have something that was PG-esque, because we did have another creepypasta ready to go that was a little bit longer. I decided to cut it because it was way too vulgar, way too gruesome, maybe. So I might keep it for a later date to post up in a way. But I wanted this episode to be more PG-esque and without any profanity or cursing or anything like that. And next up we have, for all of you out there, is the Star Wars panel that we recorded back in December 2016 at a four-state Comic-Con that was happening at the time. They titled it Winter Wonderland because it took place in December. But that being said, you can almost say that even though this is our May 4th / Star Wars special, this is also a four-state Comic-Con retrospective episode because of where this panel was recorded. But I think that it kind of fits with today's festivities. So I hope you all get a kick out of it. It was moderated by Aaron Cutler of comicbooked.com. His website will be down in the show's comments and so forth and so on. And you'll be able to link to it or click on it in the show's main page, which again is thelonecoatmafia.podbean.com. The guests for this panel is John Morton, who appeared in Empire Strikes Back, and Nalini Krishan from Attack of the Clones. I hope I'm pronouncing her name right. If I'm not, someone please correct me. And it also featured Felix Silla from Return of the Jedi. So this was a very interesting panel. I'm laying credit to a lot of this content and having this panel put together at Aaron Cutler's feet, because he was the moderator and everything else. He was so gracious to let us record this back in 2016 when we were still very, very green around the edges. And so I'm giving him a lot of credit for this, and I thank the guests on his panel for also allowing us to do this. And I hope you enjoy this panel. The only thing that we did to it that we didn't do way back in 2016 was boost a little bit, because we didn't really know how Audacity worked, and we came a long way since then, haven't we, folks? But again, I'm going to back off, and I am going to share this panel with all of you. So here's that panel for all of you.
All right. Well, I'm Aaron Clutter. I'm with comicbook.com. We're a website. We do reviews for movies, games, TV, comics, all kinds of stuff. And Matt asked me to moderate our Star Wars panel today. So we have some awesome guests, and I'm sorry, I had my list here that just went away. John Morton, who was in Empire Strikes Back, Nalini Krishnan from Attack of the Clones, and Felix Silla from Return of the Jedi. So we're going to talk with them today about their experiences with the Star Wars movies. With that, I mean, it's, you know, an awesome franchise, you guys know, and just talk, right?
All right, Doug, we'll start.
Well, I want Felix to tell us about Indiana Jones, because...
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
We're not... Okay, we don't need these, right?
Oh, you can talk into them. We're recording through them, so... Yeah, there's just not speakers out for everybody.
Oh.
Remember that guy?
Okay. We're talking about Indiana Jones, right?
Yeah. Well, if everybody...
You don't want to know anything about Star Trek, Star Wars. Yes, I was on Indiana Jones, and I double shot around for about 5 months, you know, all through the film. And I got to travel from California to Hong Kong, Hong Kong to India, India to London, London back to California and back to London, many back and forth. So I got to do a lot of stunts for the kid and whatever. Anytime you see him on a film, it was me doing the work. Actually, they hired me before they hired the kid. I went to Hong Kong. I was in Hong Kong. And somebody says, oh, Felix is a little bit too short by this much. We need to put some lifts on his shoes. So Spielberg said, no, we're not going to do that because I don't want him to run around and break his ankles or whatever. We don't see him that very close. Because, you know, when you do stunt work, if you see really close, and then they might as well use the real actor, mm-hmm. in which you never close the camera. Or you're walking, you know, looking somewhere else. So you never see your face or whatever. So the fun part was we got to, a friend of mine called me from Hong Kong, and he said, how's your passport? I said, well, why? What do you want to know? Where are you calling from? Oh, I'm in Hong Kong, and I want to know how your passport is, if it's, in, you know, okay to fly, to travel. I said, yes, it is. Can you come to Hong Kong by tomorrow night or the next day, whatever? I said, my God, I mean, you know, give me some time. Let me pack, you know. So I went from L.A. to Hong Kong, and we just started working in the town that we did the scene with the car. The guy jumped out again, landed in the car, he took off, whatever. So I was supposed to dub a little kid. And from London, we went to England. England, we were there for about 3 months. We worked, and then we went to back to California. The reason we went back and forth, because Harrison Ford, he hurt himself doing some stunt work. Actually, it was not a stunt work. It was a training. Mm-hmm. One of the guys by the name of Body by Jake. I don't know if he had his exercise to let all these people do an exercise at the studio. And Harrison Ford hurt his back, so they sent him back home to California for a special doctor to take care of his, you know, problem. So, and then we did all the second unit. And the fun part was, I'm not a swimmer. I did a scene on a raft, and I the raft flipped upside down, and I got stuck underneath. And I said, should I do, what should I do? Should I let it loose or let it go? Because I was under there, and I'm waiting for somebody to get me out. Because I told the stunt coordinator, I said, look, I'm not a swimmer. He said to me, oh, if anything happened, just pull this thing, you know, the Mae West jacket, whatever. He says, if anything happened, just pull on the string and nothing is going to happen. Don't panic. I said, okay. So it flips over and I'm under the raft and I couldn't figure out what to do. Should I let her loose or hang on? So I just stayed there hoping somebody get me out of the water in the river. Because the temperature in the water was 50 degrees. Outside it was 105. And every time I went in the water, my mouth is going like this because it was so cold. So anyway, they got me out. But there was the thing about Indiana Jones. So I think you heard that before, right?
But they haven't.
Yes, I know they haven't. I know they haven't. I hope you enjoyed the Indiana Jones thing. And every night for 6 months after that, I kept getting dreams. You know, like I'm drowning. So there was a little kind of scary situation. So that's... It's Indiana Jones, but I've done other things. I played the Ewok on, the glider on Return of the Jedi, and Adam's Family, and Buck Rogers, and whatever. I did the original Star Trek pilot, and I've been around for a few days. So, only a few days. A lot of people come to my table and say, man, you got a lot of nice things. I say, yeah, I only did this in 1 week. You know? Anyway... you want
to? Well, I don't know.
Tell them a few things about yourself. I know you've done
I'm really a fanboy, so this is the first time we've had a chance to work with Nalimi, so I want to find out what it was like with Samuel L. Jackson. And also, I looked at your photo number 9, and you look like you're pretty awesome with a lightsaber. How did you learn how to do all that stuff?
Well, I didn't really have too much training before the film for the lightsaber fight. I worked with Nick Gillard, who was the main stunt coordinator from episode 1, 2, and 3. And, it was very kind of hit and miss. It was all very spontaneous, and it was a lot of improv. So he would think of this really brilliant technique and this sequence. And then we would train, then we would film, and then we would laugh. And then, because he couldn't take any of the females seriously because we were a bit too girly. So we'd practice again, we'd do another sequence, and then we would film. So pretty much did that until we got it right because none of us had really sort of wielded a lightsaber. I mean, I've done martial arts, but I haven't done anything, quite as exquisite as using a lightsaber before. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun. And the lightsabers were very heavy. I remember the next day not being able to move my arms. You just don't realize the impact of, yielding a lightsaber and, using your arms all day. But it was a lot of fun. I had so much fun doing that. You had another question, though. And I've
Samuel L. Jackson. Oh. My wife is a fan, so
yeah, who
I'm asking the question.
Who isn't a fan of Samuel L. Jackson? He was awesome. I mean, I was standing in... in the Jedi Council scene, and that was the only scene I was with him in, but we chatted quite a lot, and he actually ended up coming to a party that Mary Yaya, who played Luminary and Dooley, had, and so she hosted a party. He went, I didn't, and I kind of regretted not going, because we didn't think he was going to turn up, but he did. So he's that down to earth that he'll turn up at little parties and things like that when he was filming. Because, they were in Australia for, a fair few months filming. I think my favorite part of working with him was when I asked him to recite his scene from Pulp Fiction. His scene at the end where he doesn't dig on swine, and he has this brilliant scene. And what was really interesting is when I asked him, he recited the whole thing to me. And he still remembered it, and I just thought that was really impressive. So that was one of my takes on working with him, is that he remembered his lines, he acted it out to me just because I asked, and I will always respect him for that as a person. So, yeah. Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
So what's one takeaway from working with the film and the franchise itself? What did you take away from your experience in the movie?
That's actually a really good question. No one has ever asked me that question before, which is really good to get new questions. What's my one takeaway? Look, I'm incredibly lucky. I think we could all say we're very lucky and very blessed to have been in that, in the films, the saga of Star Wars. And I don't know, my life has pretty much changed, you know, since the film. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I might hand it over to these guys to answer that question, because I'm really not sure what I took away from that. It was a brilliant experience. I made friends for life from that film. But, like, what did I take from that? I don't know, guys. I'm going
to
have
to. That was
a
great privilege to work in Star Wars. You know, I worked in three different things. I worked Star Wars, I worked in Planet of the Apes, and I worked Star Trek. All three big ones, you know. But Star Wars, it was really nice to be involved with a, you know, group of nice people. Like you said, you met so many friends. Mm-hmm. I did the same thing. I got to meet a lot of nice little people from London, from the, you know, the Return of Jedi. If I was never invited, I would never have been able to meet these wonderful people. So that's something that you really cherish the rest of your life, you know, because it's great, you know, get to become friends with a lot of nice people, right? And then work with George Lucas, you know, I mean, you can't find any better. And Spielberg, but, you know, well,
I think, you know, I'm a hippie. I might not look like one, but I still am. And my hair was as long as yours at one time.
Oh, really?
You know, anyway, yeah.
You could have played Cousin It.
I could have played Cousin It, yeah. And, but here's, here's him. But there was a book that was written back in the early 70s or the 60s, before you all were born, called Small is Beautiful. And it was sort of about, you know, putting meaning into our lives, which comes from just, you know, the right proportions, you know, as sort of an anti-corporate bureaucracy kind of thing. And so, you know, the notion that I think all of us that had migrated into the entertainment business was that we wanted to do things that were sort of non-commercial. I was based in the music scene and the theater scene in London. And so when I first started doing films, it was kind of not something that I wanted to gravitate into, but it was sort of underwriting this lifestyle that I had where small was beautiful. Well, Star Wars was a big budget operation, big corporate thing. When I got into it, which was the second film, Empire Strikes Back, and at that time, you know, it had a lot of money that was being thrown at it. And we all knew that it was a blockbuster, or would be, because it followed on the first Star Wars. And I wasn't really expecting anything other than a big corporate monstrosity, I want to say, you know? And what I was amazed was, as soon as I got involved in the film, I worked on it for 4 weeks, the morale was absolutely amazing. And my favorite story, which I know Felix has heard me tell, is one day arriving on the set, and the tea lady was there pushing her cart around. Well, the tea lady is sort of like in a film set. It's very hierarchical, right? And the tea lady is sort of at the bottom of the totem pole, like in the circus, the guy's sweeping up. Yeah?
Okay.
You know, I mean, it's a fact of life. I mean, you know, you have your producers that are these people that are larger than life, and then you have the salt of the earth, which is us folks that are the under five lines, and the tea lady. And the tea lady was pushing this cart around, and she was probably younger than I am now, but she seemed like she was a granny. And I'm 69, I don't mind saying it. And she just had this beatific smile. And she was pushing the cart around, and to everybody that she was offering a cup of tea to, she says, "Hello, darling. You all right, then? You having fun? Isn't it lovely?" She was the happiest person that was generating this mood, okay? The thing about it is that mood gets generated from the top down. Anybody that's in a union, how many people are in a union in here, okay?
Oh,
Yeah, it's, you know, right? It, you know, you're looking out to see that, you know, are you getting done by the management and what have you? You want it, you know, because, boy, you're going to check, you know, work to rule and all this kind of stuff. There was none of that at Star Wars. And I attribute that actually to Gary Kurtz and George Lucas and the choices they made, which resulted in the people that you worked with, and that you worked with, and I worked with. Everybody, you know, really wanted to do the right thing for the people they were working with. And the same thing was true with the belief that they had in what George was putting together. I could go on and on about this, but I think the proof of the pudding is in the eating, which you've heard from the three of us, I hope, is that, you know, we were ennobled and our lives were made greater just by being associated with this thing. I mean, I worked on 8 films, and they were all great experiences, and I have to say, my favorite film that I worked on was A Bridge Too Far, but the mood that Star Wars had was something awesome, and as a result, a lot of us are here on the circuit today to kind of share that with you, just to let you know that, hey, it was real, and if we didn't feel that way, we wouldn't be out here, you know? It's just, and I love getting together with these folks, and, you know, I hope we'll work together again, because being out here kind of continues that, and seeing the joy that we're able to share with you. So you nailed it. It's a community.
I saw your name on the list, I said, how can I miss it? I have to go and see my friend again, you know, because we did a panel together in
Wilmington.
Wilmington, yeah. With the retired Wonder Woman, remember?
Oh, yeah, she was.
We really enjoyed to be together, and it's been fun. I mean, it's really been wonderful. My life has been terrific, you know, since I didn't go look for, you know, to work in a movie. They came and they found me in California. I didn't know anything about it, about movies, nothing. I moved from the circus to L.A. I went to work for some company there, and they came in looking for me, and that's how I got started out, doing stunt work for little kids. So that's what the money was, and that's what's paying a wonderful, you know, we had a decent pension. It pays the bills, and it's been a wonderful, you know, wonderful trip, whatever you want to call it. I enjoyed it, so. Whatever you said, you were exactly right. I mean,
we were all very fortunate, you know, because we had good, successful careers beforehand. I mean, I was a West End actor in London, which is like being on Broadway. And Nalimi is, you know, an actress from Australia. And she was well known in Australia before she came into Star Wars. So we were all doing successful and wonderful things that our immediate circle were aware of. But with Star Wars, we got kind of catapulted into this phenomenon that we're all a part of, including the fans. But you all don't know about what we did before, or in many cases after. But it's that little piece of Star Wars that kind of has transformed the three of our lives.
You know, John, when Lucas went to Universal Studio to ask about, you know, he wanted to do the movie Star Wars, and they say, what is Star Wars? What is this? I mean, now they're still biting their fingernails, so we wish we had it.
Yeah.
You know, because they refused it. They didn't want nothing to do with Star Wars. They didn't know what they were talking about. You know, they didn't want to listen to him. And then 20th Century Fox picked it up, and now Disney's enjoying it, and Lucas enjoyed a few billions. And we enjoy ours, and so everything has been fun. But Universal refused it.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, they did refuse it. They were offered as a matter of fact, the Lucas had a beautiful building at Universal, right across from Universal Studio, and there were like a casting for studio work. One day, a couple of attorneys from Universal went across and said, we want to buy this building. And they didn't even know who they were talking to. And the guy says, you know what? The building is not for sale, but I would like to go cross street. Maybe I want to buy the studio. And they couldn't figure out who they were talking to. So then they realized they were talking to George Lucas because he had more money than... Yeah. So that's goes to show you, what they did. I mean, I think it's been a wonderful thing to we've been involved.
And I just want to add to that about George Lucas. I mean, you asked me about one of the biggest takeaways, and he really does create that sense of community. But he's just such a down-to-earth person. And I think that, you know, and if you look at Hollywood, it's very easy to see that certain people have reputations and, you know, have a certain maybe a different kind of take on their. You know, their entitlement that they have once they become a celebrity, or if they're a director, an executive producer, or producer, whatever it might be. But I don't think you'd ever meet anyone as down to earth as George Lucas. Incredibly nice, kind-hearted. He actually even, we had a party at the end of filming, so we had a wrap-up party, and he invited all the actors. And he was walking around with this massive bodyguard, and everyone was too intimidated to go up to him. And I went up to him and I said, thank you very much for giving us the opportunity, and thank you for running this party. You didn't have to do this. And his bodyguard was on the side going, does your friend know George Lucas? Which, a bit silly, really, but, you know, he was asking the question anyway. But then people started to talk to him. But the fact that he did that shows that he's not like other people in the industry. I think that sometimes, you know, it pays to be incredibly kind and down to earth, and no matter how much money you have, or no matter how much you've created, that you still just are like everybody else in terms of, you know, we're all humans. And he kind of really doesn't. I think he tries to instill that in anything that he works on. So that's why there's that sense of community, and that's why everyone's really happy to work with him. And he's not a difficult person to work with in any way, and it would be very difficult to be difficult around him because it's just so nice. So for those who don't know him, he's just so, so incredible.
You know, I found him kind of shy.
Yes.
He's not very, I mean, he's a very nice guy, very nice person, but he's the type of man that you cannot stop saying, you just say hello to him and whatever. But he won't stop to say and have a conversation with you. He's a, first of all, he's a very busy guy, but he's very friendly. But he just say good morning, good night, whatever, good afternoon, and that's it. But he does not, like Spielberg is a different story. Spielberg, he could talk to you for a day if he's not doing anything. You know, he told me one time and, when we were doing the Indiana Jones in London, we were early in the set, and he said, he looked at me and says, hey, Felix, if you were this much shorter, I could use you in my second ET. And I'm still waiting. You know, I mean, the second ET is never going to come. But that's how Spielberg is compared to the two different persons, the two different human beings. One is really friendly, is shy. The other one is very friendly and likes to talk. So.
We have, you know, really kind of different generations here of Star Wars actors. So, John, you want to start? And if you want to talk about, I guess, how you see maybe the newer movies versus your experience with Empire Strikes Back. And then, Felix, you can talk about Return of the Jedi as kind of that follow-up because, you know, you had so much. It really was different because, I mean, with Star Wars, that was the trial, you know. The first movie, you know, nobody really knew what to expect. But with Empire Strikes Back, they're like, oh, okay, now we've seen that first one, we want to see the second one, and the third one was just such a big, you know, here's the finale. And then, Nalini, with yours, I mean, it was like, now we're coming back to something. And if you would just each talk about your experiences and how you feel about maybe the newer movies compared to what you did.
I think the original trilogy, certainly the two that were around being produced when I was in the business in London, was still drawing on technology and skills that were on a human scale. And one of the things, the studio where the first two were made was called Elstree, Boreham Wood. And that's where Stanley Kubrick had done 2001. And he lived actually just down the road, and he was doing The Shining, which I was also in, at the same time as Lucas was doing Empire Strikes Back. The men and women that were involved in Empire Strikes Back, many of them had worked with Stanley Kubrick on 2001. And so it was model shops, puppeteers. The Tauntauns were these huge puppets that were on casters with these levers 6 feet behind the tail, where, you know, the puppet master was, you know, making the Tauntaun move with these levers and cables like this. So you were able to sort of see that old technology that was traditional, that went back to the beginning of filmmaking in England, which was very much a guild kind of thing, where you had men and women who were beautiful craftspersons that could do things you know, that they had learned in their apprenticeships. So it was, had a human scale to it.
Right now, what they use,
that's different today.
You know, right now they use CGI, like a computer. You know, like let's say about the computer. When we did a Buck Rogers in 1979, we didn't have the technology they have now. If we had the technology then, like we have now, Buck Rogers would still be running somewhere, you know. But everything is going to CGI. Not only they do it really quick, but it puts a lot of people out of work.
Mm.
You know, they could put 1,000 stormtroopers in the background, and there's nobody there to get, you know, nobody's getting a paycheck, and people are going to unemployment office. So they got to show you the, like you say, about the people pushing things.
Yeah.
You know, it's different right now. It's and it didn't get any better. It's
but didn't isn't the Force Awakens, haven't they come to a balance? Because they went heavy over on CGI in your films.
Yes, they did. They did. I don't know. I mean, I think that, I mean, in terms of CGI, I mean, you think, yeah, episode 1, 2, and 3 had this amazing CGI work, but then, you know, they weren't as popular as the first three. You know, there was something lacking, I think, in the next three, and there was some sort of disconnect. I'm sure many of you in the audience probably agree. There was this disconnect in the next three to the first three, and we could blame it on the CGI, we could blame it on the storyline, you know, they didn't have the same actors. And then I think that when Lucas got all that feedback, I think they, that, and it was sold off to Disney, I think Disney kind of knew that and really wanted to make sure they set the tone right. So all the original actors are in it, and it's still got CGI. But the storyline, you know, it was very action-filled.
Mm.
Whereas we knew the first three were really about how did these characters come to be. So, you know, it wasn't really about the action. It was about less. But I think that from all the, you know, the actors that were the audience that grew up with it were expecting something very different. So, you know, it was kind of like a hit and miss. It wasn't expected. And I remember, you know, hearing this interview from George saying he just was really surprised that people reacted that way because this was Star Wars. You know, this was Star Wars and he wasn't expecting that kind of reaction. So, you know, CGI or not, I mean, there was a lot of CGI in our films, and I think by the time it got to episode 3, I think it was, you know, it was quite good. But, you know, was it Jar Jar Binks in episode 1 that, you know, kind of, you know, really didn't sell the film? Or was it the CGI? Was it the storyline? I mean, who really knows?
Yeah.
I mean, there's different generations that watched each of them. And, you know, I'm sure there's those that like the, you know, the middle three. And then those who really loved the first three. And then those who really loved episode 7. So, you know, I've seen all of them, you know. And, I mean, I've got my favorites, too. And I'm sure if you ask different people, they all have their own favorites. But yeah, I mean, the film was heavily CGI and more storyline based, even though it was done how many years later? Like 30 years?
'98, '99.
Yeah, so like a good 20, you know, 1 year later from the originals.
Okay, well, let's talk about that, your favorite Star Wars movies.
Yeah, everyone asks me that, and I'm like, well, I really can't choose, but I really like the Ewok Adventures. I'm sorry, but I'm sold on the Ewok Adventures. I mean, I used to watch the originals on the first three on TV at the repeats, and so, you know, I'd also watch the Ewok Adventures as a child, the repeats on TV, and I have to say, I just kind of really just kind of had an affinity with those little creatures. So, that's my favorite.
I don't know which one is my favorite. I think the Return of Jedi wasn't. You know what? Tell the truth. I didn't even see too many films. I didn't have a chance to see the last one, and pretty soon, what? A couple more weeks, another one's coming out.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't really like to go and see things. I haven't been in a theater for the past 40 years because right now, not really much to go see anyway. But anyway, the reason I said the Return of Jedi because I helped a stunt coordinator. Find some little people that I knew that could do the job to do stunt work. Because everybody kept telling me when we were rehearsing on the location, hey, Felix, can you get me in? I said, well, what do you mean get you in? The reason they were asking me because they want to become involved with the union, that way you could get a little more money. Because the people in the background, they would only get $100 a day. And some of them just fall asleep. And really, I've seen it. Some of the people, they just lay down and fall asleep while we're filming because you blend with the, you know, with the leaves and the redwoods. You don't even see the difference. All the costumes are almost the same color. You just lay down and nobody, as long as you don't move, nobody knows you're sleeping. Could be a rock, could be anything. But everybody kept coming to me. They want to know if I could help him in, you know, to get into the Screen Actor Guild because they pay more money. You get a residual check. My first residual check, I had to call the company to make sure that if it was real. I don't want to cash it. I said, I have to call them. I called the people of production in San Francisco, whatever. And I said, look, I got the check. Is this real? Can I cash? Oh, yeah, no problem. Cash it. So I didn't want to, 2 weeks later, come back to me and say, hey, we give you too much money. You know, send it back to us. But it was really wonderful. And I had a lot of fun doing the show. I really enjoyed it. And it was such a great thing to be involved with. You know? So that's my favorite.
John, how about you?
Yeah.
I liked Empire Strikes Back. I think that in terms of all the balance in terms of the storyline and the arc and the directing that Irving Kirshner did was pretty good. He was able to bring out a lot of emotions. But there are other features in all of the films that I think are interesting. You know, I love the costumes of Princess Amidala and. Mm. And some of the landscapes, I guess it was that Alderaan, with the waterfalls where she was from?
Naboo,
yeah. Oh, gosh. I mean, that was really transportive. I mean, I love that. So that worked for me. And that was CGI, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Now, that worked for me. And then in The Force Awakens, people say, well, this is a rehash of A New Hope. Well, yeah, but it's still pretty good because it has that balance that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. And what I say to people is pretty much the same as I think what George thinks, is that, depending on your age and when you first enter Star Wars, that will be your favorite film. And what The Force Awakens does is it tells mythical tale, which was all part of that Joseph Campbell hero's journey that was the same as what he was telling in Star Wars New Hope. As the father of two daughters, it just so happens that the hero is a woman. I can buy that because I want that figure that, Daisy Ridley portrays as being something that's going to inspire my two daughters, so that's fine with me,
yeah.
And I think it's a great tale. I'm looking forward to episode 8. I don't know what Rogue One's going to be like, but I imagine it's going to be pretty good, it's really interesting how it all has migrated as we've all advanced in history.
We can take a couple questions from the audience.
Okay. Well, this is really more of a statement and a question. So we all know that you mentioned the circuit, right, coming out, and we appreciate you guys all being here. This is awesome. The big show, April, Orlando, Celebration.
Oh, the Celebration.
Yeah. My question is, can we see you there? And then my second kind of a comment is, you mentioned the division between the original trilogy and the prequels and what. I think Celebration's beyond the petty bickering of the common people and the fans all there want to see original trilogy, prequel trilogy, as well as the newer ones, just as much equally. Mm-hmm. So I hope we see you, and my question is, will we see you, or can you speak about it?
I honestly don't know whether you will see me in particular. I don't know about the two of you, but I don't think we've heard anything as yet as to the guest list. I think we're still waiting to hear. I think when they had the one in England recently, the guest list was very, it was kind of drawn very last minute. So
it seemed to be smaller.
Yeah, of course.
You can't just volunteer and say, I'm on Star Wars, can I come to the party? We'll have you.
Yeah, I think that they're in talks about that. I don't know if anyone's heard more, John.
I haven't heard anything about it. You have to be invited, first thing, and...
Yeah.
If you don't get invited, you're not going to be there. I've done three of them. So the last one I did, the one is Los Angeles in Anaheim, California. There was about 150,000 people in 4 days. And you have to get invited. If they invite you, I'll be glad to be there. Just send me my ticket, I'll be there.
Well, I did episode one. I did Celebration 1 in Denver, and then I did 5 and 6 and Essen in Germany and Anaheim, so I guess I've done 5. Now, with the exception of the first Celebration, all of the subsequent ones were licensed out to this group called Official Picks, which was in
Texas,
yeah, in Dallas. And when Disney bought the franchise, then that all changed, and so that Official Picks doesn't have the franchise for, you know, booking the celebrities for the, you know, the autograph hall. And so what happened, as I understand it, and you know, we were talking about this actually before the convention started today, is that without the Official Picks, somebody, Disney or Lucasfilm, was trying to manage, you know, who the celebrities were that they were going to invite. And I guess they were able, because of the cost considerations, to get a lot of the people that were still in England to show up, and but they weren't prepared to bring us over like they were able to do or were willing to do for Essen, for example, or I guess probably the Star Wars celebration in London.
Yeah, I never went
whenever
there.
That was.
Yeah.
So I don't know that they've worked this out. And last night, my wife and I were having dinner with Jim Lucino, James Lucino, and Jimmy actually said to you that he was going, right? So, but that is worked out through Penguin Random House and the Lucasfilm Book Division. So I think that whatever that package is all done differently than us actors. So I imagine you're going to see a lot of the Star Wars authors there. If they're going to get Jim, they're going to get others that are out there that are writing the contemporary. Now, Lucino's book is the companion to Rogue One, and he talked a little bit about that book last night with us, which was kind of interesting. I can't really go into it, but well, what I can say that was kind of interesting is that he had to do a little bit of a rewrite. This is off the record, okay? There's no, wait a minute. No.
Yeah, don't.
Actually, no, I realize.
Okay, my lawyer will be in your seat.
No,
don't worry
about
it.
No, I don't want to go there. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
Lucas is not going to do anything about it, but Disney might do something about it. He might
I beg your pardon. I hadn't realized we're being. This is for a podcast.
Yeah,
so.
Anyway,
you're just joking.
Whatever, it's going to be good. I just wanted to impress you with how much I know on the inside, which is zero.
Well,
I don't want to go down there again.
Let's hope we get invited for the celebration in Orlando.
Yeah,
I like to be there.
Yeah.
I've done 3 of them.
It
one
is
in Orlando and 2 in California, and I love to do it, you know, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd love to bring Jack and Jesse Jensen, brothers that were in the film. Yeah, they're amazing. Yeah, definitely.
Okay, any other questions from the group?
Yeah, question. I don't know if anyone or any of you have seen one of the latest Netflix documentaries, I Am Your Father, with David Prowse, kind of George Lucas thing. I was wondering if anybody could maybe shed a little light on that. Have you had any comments on that, or if you can't even with them?
Didn't even know.
I didn't know that either. We get Netflix. What's it called?
It's called I Am Your Father, and it's on David Prowse, kind of the division between Lucasfilms and David Prowse over a few different things.
Oh,
cool. Okay. Does he know about that?
I believe he declined to be interviewed for the documentary, so I guess he does have some knowledge of it.
You saw that.
It was very good. Yeah.
He
actually recreates the scene at the end of Return of the Jedi that he really probably should have been in from the beginning.
When they take the helmet off.
So you don't get to see that, unfortunately, because they wouldn't give him the rights to refilm it. But they went ahead and did it anyway in a private screening. So it'd be nice to see that. But very good documentary.
Who refused to be interviewed? I know you said
George Lucas.
Oh, George Lucas. Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's no surprise there. So, okay. We'll have to check that out.
Yeah, check it out. Very good. If anyone wants to
do it. I Am Your Father. Okay.
Okay. And you had a question.
This is actually on to you.
Uh huh.
Because I know those two, they kind of like played, I guess in a sense, minor characters, but for you, you're actually one of the major characters And, like, how was it as a dark side character versus a light side character?
Well, it's interesting you should say a light side character, because my character goes dark in the Clone Wars comic, in the Clone Wars TV show. So I actually liked playing the good side. I really did. I think that, you know, just generally speaking, I fight for the good, not for the bad. I don't know, it was fun. I mean, I don't know, you know, it was fun playing with a lightsaber and fun being a Jedi, because I don't think that there were many female Jedis in the first three. So to be one of the very, you know, very little handful of Jedis that they had was like a real privilege, you know, and they made the character so magnificent. I mean, she had so many abilities. So it was kind of a shame that, you know, when it came to Clone Wars, that she turned into this character that was just atypical of someone who's just corrupt and is corrupted, which is not really who she is.
Yeah, much like what happened with Anakin Skywalker.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, they filled her as a traitor at the end, and you don't really know her outcome at the end of it. You know, everyone thought she might be in the Rebels, but she wasn't. And yeah, I mean, she was an amazing character. And even with each of the different female Jedis that they had, you know, Amy Allen, who played Aayla Secura, Shakti, played by Oli Shoshan, Illuminari Undoli, who's my master, played by Mary Oyaya, each of us had our own very, you know, kind of like, you know, very defined, you know, very defined characteristics. And I think that George Lucas paid a lot of attention to that. And so, you know, the characters get a lot of attention, you know, at the same time as a result of that. But you know, it was fun. I mean, it was fun because, yes, I played the good side, but it wasn't just that. It was the fact that I was a Jedi and it was a female Jedi, which was kind of, I think, something that people were really looking for. They're like, where are the females in this? You know, it's all the males, you know, well, let's get some female power in there. So, yeah, I got to say, I was pretty, like, happy to have been, you know, one of those females. Yeah.
Well, we're coming down to the last 10 minutes or so. So, do you guys have any final words for the folks?
I want to say thank you for you guys for coming. And yeah, if it wasn't for you guys, we wouldn't be have a chance to be here. I mean, the fans that make the movies, right? So
yeah, I was going to add to that as well, because I mean, you know, and we could probably all attest to this, that, you know, Star Wars has, you know, any of the films you do, if they have a big following, it always changes your life. But you can say a movie changes your life, but I don't think it's so much the movie. I think it's always the fans, because the fans will control anything, how popular a movie is, whether the next movie comes out. But if it weren't for the fans, yeah, you know, we wouldn't be here at all, doing shows, you know, week after week, month after month, year after year. So thank you very much for being here. So we give a little applause to you all.
And you know what, Star Wars thing, I've done so much filming. Well, what we film is, you know, The Return of Jedi. And when I went to look at the film, I said, what happened? What happened to all the stuff that we did, all the stuff that we filmed? Was barely, a little bit, they just put a little bit on you. If you blink your eyes, you lost it. And there was nothing in there. But we filmed for 3-4 weeks. And we did a lot of nice things, but you know, we did a lot of some funny stuff. I don't think Lucas liked it because he figured it was too much comedy. But other than that, I didn't realize what the... I just couldn't figure out why. We did so much. We filmed so much. We worked so hard, and all of a sudden, it's all gone. But I'm pretty sure they have it somewhere in that reel. Mm-hmm. Someday, somebody's going to see it. So it goes to show you how much you put so much hard work and... And then you go look at it, and you don't even see yourself. Barely see yourself. So, you know, it's you know, you work hard, and then you don't, you know. So I don't know what to do with it. And you're not falling asleep, are you, John?
No, I'm just contemplating what you had to say.
I'm glad you were so.
You did say.
I think you know, it's a collaborative art.
Yes.
Which answers your question about David Prowse. You know, if we lose sight that film is a collaborative art, then we get in trouble, because then we start thinking in terms of our ego.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's, you know, how Darth Vader was conceived and executed in, you know, using David because, I mean, he, you know, as a young man, he was a magnificent body. I mean, he was, you know, Mr. Universe for, you know, England. But he had a West Country British voice that was on the treble side, you know. He had a lot of top and not much bottom. And so you had this image that only James Earl Jones could fill. I mean, really, you know. I mean, the voice of Dak that you hear is not my voice, okay? But if you go to Superman 2, you're going to hear my voice. And the only reason why that happened was because I happened to be available when they wanted to do the looping, the dubbing of my character's voice. And so I was able to go down to the studio and get it looped, whereas all of the minor characters, as you put it, in the case of those of us that were working in London, all the post-production and the looping was done in Los Angeles. Well, they're not going to fly John Morton over to do one line. Mm-hmm. It makes no sense. Yep. And who knows John Morton's real voice anyway? Who cares? Let's get some guy, you know, who is a voice actor professional in Los Angeles who we know has the chops that can do the dubbing, and that's how that worked.
You know what it was?
No, but I tell you who I did find out, if I may take a review. At Celebration 6, a Norwegian guy came up to me and he says, "Hey, you know, Mr. Morton, I think I know the guy who played Dak in the snowspeeder scene in Finza." Well, this guy played Dak before I did because they shot that scene when the AT-AT steps on him. And I heard from this guy on Facebook about three weeks ago who had he said, "Hey, do you remember I told you? Well, here's this guy's email address. He'd like to hear from you." So this guy, his name is Ecker. I sent him an email a couple of weeks ago saying, "Hey, you got to come out on the circuit. Hey, if the fans want to see all the Boba Fetts, you know, they're going to want to see all the Dax. So come on and join us, man." No.
Oh, okay. So how you like Norway.
Film is a collaborative art, folks. Don't let it go to your heads.
Yeah.
Share the wealth and the fun. Anyway.
Okay. Well, we really appreciate you guys taking time out of your busy schedules to come here, for one thing, and to talk to us about your great experiences with Star Wars. So anything else from fans? Okay. Well, all right. Well,
thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Welcome back, everyone. I hope you enjoyed that panel that was recorded back in December 2016. I hope you enjoyed it. And the only editing that we did to it was recently, like as of this recording, so you're able to hear questions and some of the low points a little bit better without turning up the volume on your MP3 player of choice, whatever it might be. And before we continue, I just want to share two anecdotal stories pertaining to Star Wars that I might have told in the past, because it's Star Wars Day and we're celebrating the day as fans, and I don't want to head into the name-calling and the whole negativity that's been surrounding the fandom as of late. But the two tales I want to share with all of you. One is meeting with Ray Park, who most notably portrayed Darth Maul in Attack of the Clones. And the fact of the matter is, I met him. The person in front of me was one of those dealer type folks. We've all met them at conventions. They're the ones that bring 15 tons of, like, or equivalent of stuff to get signed, and they just flip it either at their booth or at their store or on eBay or in Facebook groups or so forth and so on. Again, this was like, I don't know, maybe 15, 16 years ago. And basically meeting, Ray was a great guy, nice guy. And again, you could tell, it's like when I walked up to him, I had a Star Wars Episode 1 script to be signed. Yes, it's standard. And I was kind of using it as a catch-all for the Star Wars folks to have signed. And I looked at him straight, dead in the eye. Now, here's a man that could kick my rear end five ways to Sunday. And I said, listen, Ray, I got a question I could ask you. And I saw this man's body just tense, like, as if to say, ah, oh, God, not another Star Wars question. I'm getting sick of this crap. And when I said, listen, in X versus Sever. And because I, at that time, I knew he appeared in that movie, and it wasn't one of those well-known movies, but still, I just saw his body relax, and there was almost a sigh coming, like, thank God it's not a Star Wars question. It's something now that I'll be more than happy to answer this. Thank God. And I asked him, like, in X vs. 7, how tall is actually Lucy Liu? Because Ray's a short short dude. I'm putting it past him. He can be a badass if and when he wants to, and it's just that he's kind of short. He's maybe about 5'2", but he's like, well, yeah, she is kind of short, but it's mostly camera angles, man. But yeah, you could tell there was a smile on his face. He was very, once you start talking with him, and it's not really, you're bugging him about the same thing that everybody is there bugging him. He was a nice guy. And the other thing is the late Kenny Baker. And for those of you who do not know the name, Kenny Baker played, he was in loads of roles, but in Star Wars, he, like, not just Darth Vader, but he, like C-3PO, there was an actor inside the suit, and Kenny Baker was in pretty much inside R2-D2 in times, controlling certain aspects of R2-D2, and we got me, Mad-Eye Markey, who's been on the show before, and let's call him Botman. Botman, where we were all just wandering around the show floor, and we met up with Kenny Baker. You know, here's a guy who played R2-D2. You know, we are fans of Star Wars, and we loved Kenny Baker in Time Bandits, because he was also known for that. Plus, granted, he's been in a whole mess of other stuff, too. But we knew him for Star Wars and Time Bandits. So we got our autographs and everything else. We're heading back to kind of the main entrance of Wizard World Philly. And we got a guy come up to us. Now, we're being a bunch of goofballs to each other. You know, me, Botman, and Mad-Eye, we're friends. We're good friends. We're all being that friendly goofball to each other, and we get this guy coming up and said, like, hey, Kenny wants to speak to you guys. And we're like, oh crap, you know, again, that friendly banter gets back and's like, all right, who did what, you know, what, you know, if I'm going down for what one of you two idiots did, I want to know now. And turns out just Kenny wanted a photo with us. That's it. That's all he wanted, because we were a bunch of these strange individuals, or the camaraderie amongst friends, that positive energy that he must have got from us, and how friendly we were to each other. And he just wanted this, you know, photo with the three of us, which we were more than happy to oblige. But this was, again, before the popularity of photos being posted up to social media. Back at that time would have been MySpace, but we didn't really have the aspect of digital photos, but if there was, we would have been more than happy to download that and share it to our timelines and so forth and so on. But like I said, this show, this special was primarily for everyone. I wanted it to be a PG, at most PG-13 rated, for all of you out there to share and enjoy. I wanted it because there's a lot of negativity in the fandom right now, with a lot of the commentators on YouTube going back and forth and amongst the fandom. I just wanted something to be positive, something everybody could enjoy and surround themselves to enjoy. If you got something great out of this, or maybe you have a disagreement, you can also be more than willing to email the show at longcoatmafia@gmail.com, or leave a message, a comment in the pinned post on our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/TheLongCoatMafiaPodcast. While you're there, don't forget to hit that like button so you can catch up on other stuff that we're posting up. What else? If you want, you can also leave a comment on our YouTube. If this YouTube allows this episode to be posted up, you can leave a comment on the show's episode and let us know what you think and so forth and so on. And if it's really interesting, we'll read it on an upcoming episode of our show. So that's that, and we'll reply to you, and we'll let you know what our thoughts are. And what else? We do have. You can also comment to us and reply to us on Twitter or Instagram. Our Twitter handle is Longcoat Mafia, and our Instagram handle is Longcoat Mafia. So please follow us there, hit that follow button, and while you're on YouTube, please hit that subscribe button. I have some videos to post up that for some strange reason, I'm being a slacker, I need to post up. I'll post them up eventually, so please hit that subscribe button so you'll be notified when they're posted. And the reason why I'm being kind of a slacker on that end is because I'm still kind of getting used to my new schedule with my new 9-to-5 job that I have outside this show. So, what else? Per other social media, I will be trying to stream. I got a couple of new, either remastered or redone Final Fantasy stuff. I have, like, for my Xbox One, I picked up on the cheap Final Fantasy VII, Final Fantasy IX, and the remastered, granted all these I'm saying are remastered versions, the remastered version of Final Fantasy VII, IX, X, and X-2. So good chance I'll be streaming these on either our Mixer channel or on our Twitch channel, because it's easier for me to do that way. Hopefully I'll get my character up to par on Borderlands 3, or I might restart streaming Borderlands 3 with a brand new character, since I'll be getting new weapons through this new cartel event that's been going on. I should be starting to play that character again soon. What else? We do have, like I said, Mixer and Twitch. Our Mixer channel is mixer.com/LCMP, and our Twitch channel is sorry, folks, I'm tired, rented lips. Our Twitch channel is twitch.tv/LongcoatMafiaPod. We might even stream on YouTube, if not on Facebook. And either way, we'll let you all know what place we're streaming on by either Twitter or Facebook. So please follow us on either one of those social media platforms, or I'll probably post on all three, so choose one and please follow us, because I'll let all of you know. I do recommend you guys and gals out there that choose to listen to our show and listen to our back catalog to subscribe to both our YouTube channel as well as our Facebook channel, because once we start posting up videos again, I might strictly do either Facebook or YouTube, depending on which one's being a real pain in the neck, I'll post the one. Meaning, if YouTube's being a real pain in the neck, I'll post to Facebook. If Facebook's being a real pain in the neck, I'll post to YouTube. So, please subscribe, like, and or subscribe to either one of those. Also, if you don't catch the links or what I said, they are on our main page, which is thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. And remember, The Longcoat Mafia is all together. There are no spaces in that. Again, it's thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com. If you listen to us on your desktop or laptop computer, you're able to do so by, one, going to either Apple iTunes or Apple Podcasts, wherever they're calling it right now, or Spotify or Stitch Radio, or if you so want, you could go to our main page, and which is, again, thelongcoatmafia.podbean.com, and listen to any episode you wish, going straight to the very first cringeworthy episodes that we ever put out. And my God, when I re-downloaded the episode containing the Star Wars panel, oh dear God, it was so cringy hearing how bad I did the show. Not saying the panel was bad, just how I introduced the panel and everything else. My energy was off. So either way, but still, you're able to listen to everything going back to the beginning. And I do recommend you bookmarking that page just in case iTunes decides or Spotify decides to go glitchy on everybody and not want to snag the podcast. I've had that sometimes with a few other podcasts out there that are independent. Something goes wrong, there's a hiccup somewhere along the line, and iTunes goes, huh, what, where? And so having our main page bookmarked is a good thing. And not to mention, you're able to download the episodes and listen to them in your player of choice. So if you don't want to listen to them on iTunes, you don't have to. Plus, you're able to stream them straight from the website. Also, if you choose to listen to us through a mobile device or a cell phone or smartphone, you're able to do so by going to either Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher Radio, or we're a couple. We're also found in a couple of places where they just catch all the podcasts in one group. So feel free to use your podcatching app of choice. I do recommend using one of the major ones like Spotify or Google Podcasts or Apple Podcasts. But I also highly recommend the Podbean app because, one, if you use our website, the only way to snag them off the website, if you want to go all the way back, is using the Podbean app. Plus, having the Podbean app on hand allows you to snag the episodes if, again, iTunes, Spotify, or Google Podcasts, in this case, gets a little glitchy, and you're still able to snag the episodes and listen to them at your leisure. That's pretty much it. I got nothing more to say right now. I'll catch all of you next week. Next week will either be a host-based episode or a music theory episode. Depends on what happens during the course of the week. But either way, take care, and I am out. I'll speak all of you after I have a Star Wars mini marathon myself. So, take care. See you all next week. Enjoy today. Enjoy the week. And enjoy your fandom. I'm the Reverend Godfather, and I am out.
You've been listening to the Longcoat Mafia Podcast, the internet's most hated and mafia-themed geek podcast.